Welcome to the Archives of the Loralee Show, conversation for exploration, timeless discussions to challenge and expand our worldview. And while you may find our guests fascinating, the views expressed may not necessarily reflect those of our own or of the Cuyamangue Institute. That's why we call it Conversation for Exploration. And join in our ongoing live events, interviews, our own presentations, and much, much more as we go exploring. Learn more at CuyamangueInstitute.com and Loralee.com. Welcome to Conversation for Exploration. Hi, I'm your host, Loralee. As you know, this talk show exists because we love to tell each other the story of our lives, the story of our exploration of the world around us and our place in it. I love storytelling and sitting around talking. One of my favorite quotes is from Muriel Ruckhauser. She says, "The world is not made up of atoms, but of stories." And we have a storyteller with us today, Gene Tagabon. He lives here in Seattle. He's in studio with us with various flutes and guitar and lots of stories. He's a member of the Tlingit tribe, which is the indigenous native people to this area here in Seattle, and also from the Raven Freshwater Sockeye clan in Hoonah, Alaska. And he's been working in the wellness field as a storyteller, trainer, consultant, and it's a great delight to have you here today, Gene. Thanks.
Thank you, Laura. It's good to be here.
You say that we are all story. Tell me about that.
We are all stories. We are the writers. We're the creators. We're the directors. We're the producers, the tellers, the actors of our story. Whatever we do, everything that we do is part of our story. When we're waking up in the morning, eating our dinner, whatever. My grandfather told me, he says, "Son, we're all a story." I go, what you mean, Papa, we're all a story? I mean, we're all a story. I mean, what you mean? Shh, I'm trying to tell you that we're all a story. That your story started before you were even born. And that once you got born, your story came to life. Then you start to crawl. Your story start to crawl. You start to walk, your story start to walk. And you start to run, your story start to run. You grow up, you become an adult, you have children. And their story starts there too. Live a good story, son. You live a good story. So that way when you get my age, you got something to talk about.
You say that the only givens we have is we're born and we die. We enter stage left, we exit stage right. And what we do in between is really up to
us.
It's
totally up to us. It's about, again, another teacher of mine told me, I mean, we're all accountable for ourselves. And it's the choices that we make. You know, one day we're going to die. And what do you want your story to be told? That there lies Johnny, who was self-centered, didn't care about his family, and disrespected everybody, or whatever. Or you want, here lies Johnny, is very respectful, loving, very wonderful family man, was very giving, loving, lived his life well. And that whenever we walk in this world, we're telling our story. Wherever I go in this vast country, this world, I'm telling my story by just standing there. Again, we're sharing who we are. And let me introduce myself in the way that I was taught.
Oh, please.
And is Kayao Yuk to a sock. Duck dane tan a hut. Kao kit duck. Kao kdu kandu a hut city. Wishkitan yari a hut. A e shik de heen you do a sock. Shangu kedi dutch con a And basically what I just said was hi. And But I just, again, I introduce myself. My Thinkit name is Guy Yao. I'm from the Duckdane Ton clan, the Raven Freshwater Sockeye clan from Hoonah, Alaska. I'm the child of a Wichkatan Eagle Thunderbird clan. My father's Thinkit name is Yiktaheen. I am the grandchild, Jungle Katie Dutch Khan, of a Thunderbird. My grandmother comes from Ahwan, Ok Bay, Alaska, in Juneau, Alaska.
And talk about family values. It's all right there in your introduction.
Exactly. And that family is very important to who we are. And that's part of my story, is my story is my family story. When I sit here also, I'm not just representing myself. I'm representing my family and
which is why your grandfather said it started before you were even born, your
absolutely,
story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even I acknowledged our ancestors that are around here, that my ancestors right now are sitting with your ancestors. And this room is full of our ancestors around us right now. And they're probably, who knows, they're sitting there. They might be singing songs, shaking hands, and dancing around us and laughing and telling their stories back and forth. And so I acknowledge them also as I was sitting here with my introduction. And it's everything. Everything is a story. Everything that we do is a story. So what kind of story do you want to tell? And it's totally up to you. The Creator gave us that choice on what it is. There's a story that goes that the Creator was so happy of all His children, the spirits. This is an old story long ago, that He wanted to give them a gift. And He says, line up here. I want to give you a gift. You're all beautiful and I love all of you. So the first spirit comes forward and the first spirit says, I don't know what it is that I want. And He tells that spirit to step aside and just listen and watch. Next spirit comes by and spirit goes, I want to fly highest to the spirit world up in the sky. I want to be able to see long distances. And the Creator goes, you are eagle. The next spirit comes by, I want to see everything in the details and look up at everything. And okay, you are mouse. I want to walk through the forest and be strong, and everyone sees me and knows that I have strength and that power. You are bear. And each spirit came forward and stated their gift. There is one spirit that says, I want to be of service to the people. I want to be of service, give myself to them. I want to be the food for the people. And the Creator was overjoyed. And the Creator goes, you are salmon. You are salmon. So this one spirit who stood aside, saw all these spirits come by. And the Creator goes, now, do you know what you want? And that spirit goes, I don't know. They're all so good. They're all so good. I'm not sure what it is that I want. It's such a hard choice. And the Creator goes, that is your gift. Yours is the gift of choice. Human beings, you have the gift of choice. So it's our choice on what our story wants to be.
And if Joseph Campbell has said, we're each the hero in our own hero's journey or heroine's journey, and mm-hmm. we're writing it as we go, co-writing it, I would guess.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And we are...
It's such an empowering message, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is. It is empowering. And to empower ourselves. And it's, again, it's our choice on how we want to write it.
Do you feel it was no accident that you became a storyteller, actor, singer, dancer? That this was the way that you conveyed what you have to say because you grew up in a culture in which story, song, and dance was so primal, so present?
Well, I'll tell you what. If you would have asked me in high school what if I would be doing this, there I would be going, no way.
Because?
Because, well, in high school, I didn't like to stand up in front of people and talk. I started dancing when I was about 5 years old. And through grade school and junior high, I kept dancing and listening to the stories and the songs. And then there was that point at the end of junior high going into high school where I kind of lost interest. There's like all teenage
sure,
kids.
You had other things to explore.
There's other things to explore. I was very into sports. But at that time also, I started getting into drugs and drinking, and really took me away from all those things. And then it wasn't until after high school and in college where I finally got back into the
culture. Where did you go to high school and college?
I grew up in Juneau, Alaska. I went to grade school there.
Typical
junior high
public school.
Typical public school. I lived out in, I guess you would say, the country, and Juneau is the valley. And where I lived, I grew up in a house where there was only three houses on the street. And so my brother and I, we just ran through the forest. We were surrounded by trees and forests and water, rivers, creeks, ponds. It was a wonderful, wonderful way to grow up. And I couldn't have asked for anything better. And although I didn't grow up too much around other Native kids, because they lived more in town, and my brother and I, we grew up out the road, out in the country more, out in the valley.
Nature makes a wonderful companion and playmate, though.
Yep. The frogs, the trees, and everything. We were always, the dragonflies. I remember all those things. Bears, deer. We had rabbits who just slept on our front porch. It was wonderful. And again, my parents were awesome. Beautiful parents. I'm very blessed in that area. And so I went to high school there in Juneau. And then after high school, I went to Haskell Indian Junior College in Lawrence, Kansas. And I was surrounded by Native people from all over the United States. And it was a huge eye-opener for me.
How so?
Well, I've experienced Alaska and the villages in Alaska. And we traveled a little bit when I was growing up, and my parents took us East Coast all over, but we never really traveled and visited reservations. And so on Haskell Indian Junior College was like one big reservation where Native people would gather from all over the country. And powwows. I've never been to a powwow before. In Alaska, we don't have powwows. We have potlatches or gatherings. I've never seen a fancy dancer, traditional dancer, or that type of dancing before. The different languages, the different cultures, the people there. And so it just really opened my eyes up to, okay, they are them, but who am I? Who am I? And so it really helped me explore that. Who am I? And then it got to a point, again, with the drugs and alcohol, I just needed to do something different. And I knew that was a very destructive lifestyle. And one night, morning of looking in the mirror going, who are you? There's something better. And then my friends asked me, they wanted me to go to treatment. And I'm going, I don't want to go to treatment. Go to treatment in a building. Growing up in the woods, I went to the woods. I went to the forest.
Did your own treatment.
Yeah, did my own thing. I knew that's what I needed to do.
Now drug and alcohol prevention is one of the workshops that you teach.
Uh-huh. Leadership, communications, prevention, yeah.
Awareness, motivation, and spirit. It's a good repertoire there. You mentioned fancy dancing, and I know that Sherman Alexie, a real famous and wonderful writer on Native American, he has a new movie, The Business of Fancy Dancing, and you had a lead role there. Tell us about, what is fancy dancing, and tell us about working with Sherman Alexie.
I played the role of Aristotle Joseph, a Native man from the Spokane Indian Reservation who went to school in Seattle with his childhood friend, Seymour Palotkin. Aristotle had a hard time adjusting. He ended up going back home, back to the res, where Seymour Palotkin stayed there and became a successful poet writer in Seattle. Aristotle went back, and although he didn't want to go back, that's where he was from. And Aristotle is an angry man, mad just because of whatever events happened in his life. And so that's a little bit of, and so the story goes on where Seymour goes back home because a childhood friend of both Aristotle and Seymour's passes on. And so it's for a family funeral, family service that they went back to, and just the conflicts, the disputes and blaming Seymour for selling out to his people, using his people to gain and get his money and his fame, and not supporting the people back at home. And so that's a little bit of what the story is about.
And working with Sherman was great. Sherman is a wonderful man to work with. We had a great time. He's a brilliant writer, very funny and very heartfelt. He's got a comes from a good place.
I've seen two of his other movies, and they have a wonderful indie spirit about them, the movies, and also a sense of the walkabout, you know, being called on a quest and what happens then to face these challenges and look inside. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, just very similar to, as an artist, I grew up in Juneau, Alaska, and that's mainly where the Tlingit people are in Southeast Alaska, is from that area. But as that story goes in the business of fancy dancing, Seymour Palotkin had to leave the reservation to really be successful and to get to where he wanted to go. I've moved down here to Seattle about 3 years now, just to pursue that same exact thing. I got to a point in Juneau where the only way into Juneau is by boat or plane. You can't drive in, and it can be quite isolated. I kept doing the same thing over and over. But I just wanted to do more. I wanted to reach more people, travel, and to pursue my art, my life as an artist, and a trainer, and a teacher also. And so I had to leave Juneau, and I'm pursuing it here. And it's been a good move, although I miss Alaska. And in fact, I just got back from Alaska last night.
Oh, good.
And back home with my people, and I realized that I love those people. They are my people. They're Nupiak, the Yupik, the Athabaskan, Aleut, Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian. They are my people. Alaska is my state, and it's always my home, and whatever I can do to help them. And I'm always going to go back home. That's to promote them and to assist them in any way I can.
What are the challenges to passing on that culture and that wisdom and those traditions to the next generation? I was real impressed by seeing the Tlingit performers and the little kids, and everybody had made their robes, and everybody knew the songs and danced together. And I thought, wow, it's wonderful. What are the challenges, though, to get the young people interested? You said you were not interested and then came back in.
The challenges of keeping our youth interested is because there's so much out there. I mean, we get distracted by whatever's on the media, the TV, radio.
Don't we all?
And exactly. And the music that's going around, and these young kids are definitely, they're being pulled in that direction. And to our stories are being lost. Our songs are being lost. Our elders are passing away at an accelerated rate that it's scary. And everything that when they pass away, they're taking these songs and dances with them. And so it is a challenge to...
It's like a library burning down.
Exactly. That you can't... You're not going to get this back. And again, I talk about accountability. We are accountable. We need to teach. As Native people, we need to step forward and take charge of and write our story again. And so to get the interest of the children and to teach them young, get them interested young. I mean, I was taught young, and that's a good thing because I went back to it. I strayed off my path, but thank goodness I went back to it because I knew about it. There's so many kids out there who... they don't know about it. They're not taught at a young age. And so when they get to older, high school, college, and then there's something missing inside of them, they don't know what it is.
What is that something that's missing inside of all of us that all keeps us on that quest in whatever way people choose to try to fulfill it, explore it, whatever?
It's just that connection. We all want to be connected to something. And we're always asking this question, who am I? Every one of us are always asking.
Where did we come from? Where are we going?
Who am I? Where do I come from? How is my relationship to this world, to this earth? What is my purpose? And we're all asking these questions. And so there's a part of I see that in these young kids who struggle. And they're asking that question, who am I? And if I can go in there and to teach them, hey, this is who you are. You are Tlingit. You are Eagle. You are Raven. You come from this place. That's who you are. And even when kids come up to me, Native kids or whoever, They may be Irish, they may be French, German, they may be Asian. And they're asking me, oh, I'm so envious because you have your culture. And I tell them, you have yours too. Go and
be a bridge, make the connection.
Exactly. I had an elder, he told me, we are ambassadors and bridges as we traveled around the country. And tell us, go look it up, go find it, go research it, go write your story. And again, getting back to the question of how do we teach this? It is a challenge. We need to teach them young and to get them out there and just to really bring them in and just to nurture that part of them and to share with them that.
Because
that
the stories and the song and the wisdom is that connection, that is that bridge back to spirit, back to that missing piece inside your soul, isn't it?
Absolutely. And there's that, the songs. I had another friend told me this one time. He goes, she says that when our kids are seeking, they're looking for something to eat, but they don't know what it is. They're going, oh, I'm so hungry, but I don't know what it is that I want to eat. She always pulls out her native foods and feeds it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go, that's what I wanted.
What are the native foods? Salmon?
Salmon, crab. Up in Alaska, I was spoiled. I grew up on salmon. I grew up on clams, king crab, huge king crab.
Great brain food, that.
Exactly. Deer, moose, seal, octopus, you name it. Everything that comes from the land, the ocean, berries. I grew up on these foods. And even now, today, I'll tell you, I'm a snob when it comes to seafoods or going to restaurants around here.
Discerning palate because you've had the best.
Exactly. I have had the best. And growing up in Alaska, it's wonderful. It was just a fantasy fairy tale land of fishing and living with the animals and nature. It was great. It was. I look back on it. It was great. And so all these foods, I grew up eating these foods, and it does. I was with a native theater company, and we traveled across the United States. We'd always take our native food with us, and whenever we got tired or worn out, or whenever we got we just needed to connect, we would eat. We'd have a little potluck, and we'd just eat and share our foods and eat it. And that always, again, in the foods, the spirit of the foods of the land, and we fill ourselves with that.
You look in Alaska that because it's cold, because there's so much snow there so much of the year, it's hard to develop it, and it's such a huge territory, that it's remained so pristine as opposed to other parts of the country. You know, plowed under and bulldozed and remodeled and all of that.
Oh, you go to the cities, it's growing. It's the cities or towns and villages are definitely growing. But Alaska is a vast state. And I learned it was such a vast state. I got to travel throughout the whole state and visit the villages, these small villages.
What are they like?
Oh, it's just, there's this out there, it is like a third world country out there. Some places they don't have running water. Some places they're still using outhouses, honey buckets, and little shacks, and they don't have insulation. And they're living in this harsh environment with their children. In many ways that you look at them, they're very poor. But spiritually, they're very rich. I was out there and I ate their foods. Again, I'm going back to the foods. I ate their food. I shared with them their foods, their meals. And it was wonderful. Walrus, whale, berries, fish, ptarmigan.
It's a bird, isn't it?
Yeah, ptarmigan's a bird. And muskrats, beaver, seal, all these foods. And then I went back to Anchorage, the city, and I went to a restaurant. I ate at a restaurant, and I got sick from eating those foods, as opposed to traveling around all summer long and eating all these natural foods. And out there is just an eye-opener. It just really opened myself up to just the multitude of, I mean, we have our issues here in the United States and Alaska of people living out there with very little resources. In fact, I was up there and they were talking about the earthquake that happened up there. And all the media coverage was more on the cities and the roads and all that. They didn't cover the what happened out there in the villages.
What happened out in the villages.
But lack of resources, food, getting out there. And just to get out there and just to touch with them, say, hey, everything's okay. Everything's okay. We're still here. We haven't forgotten about you out there.
But, you know, we all live off the land. In the Western picture of progress, it's take the goods of the land, change them into some other form, work at jobs you don't like to earn the money to pay for them, as opposed to just directly go and make those goods direct. I don't know which system poverty would be and rich would be. One leads to impoverishment of the spirit and slavery to other kinds of things, distractions, roadblocks to spirit. I don't know. If you could turn the clock back, would you go back to where the native peoples still owned the land, would still live in the traditional ways? You know, would you step through that door? Would you just say, I like the West. I like the modern conveniences. I like traveling and meeting people from all over the world. I mean, the old ways had their limitations, too. What would you do? What door would you go through?
Absolutely. I would love to go back. In fact, I have dreams, I have visions and thoughts and fantasies of going back and in time and meeting these people and living in that way. What would I do? I mean, sure, I like this area, this time now, these conveniences. And I've lived out there. I've taught some survival skills out there, and I've lived out there in the forest. And I love that. I love it out there.
It's nice to have both, isn't it?
It's good to have both, but it's a hard choice.
We're talking with Gene Tagaban, storyteller and singer, dancer. We'll hear song, guitars, flutes, more stories, and more of that indigenous and perennial wisdom for today. I'm Laura Lee. Let's get back to our conversation with Gene Tagaban, a Tlingit singer, dancer, and storyteller. You know, I have to say about that connection. Paul and I were in London recently and touring England, and we went to the British Museum, and we had our British friends with us, and we were taking a tour through, you know, all of history there in the various rooms and departments, and Paul noticed the Americas. So he said, let us take you guys on a tour of our part of the country. So we went down to the Americas rooms, and they had a wonderful display, small but representative of all of the native cultures, the Pueblo cultures, the Tlingit, the Southwest Plains, and all of this. And so we felt so at home going into those rooms and seeing those beautiful objects. And I also want to say about in terms of Western progress. I go into a store and I look at all this junky merchandise, mass-produced, ill-made, made for a temporary wish fulfillment. You know, it's you're only going to have it and use it for a few years and then toss it away into the land heap. And I go and I look at these beautiful objects in these museums, so lovingly made, so made of materials from earth, representing birds and animals and so such spirit connection. I thought, who's impoverished here? Impoverishment would come from the breakdown of culture, it would seem to me, that you have lost the ways to go and make these objects and to live well and to provide yourself what you need from just what's there. Why does progress and enrichment have to do with, you know, turning raw goods into something unrecognizable and fashionable for only a few minutes without that eternal beauty? I don't know. I have to question my own culture down to its core.
I mean, part of it, too, I mean, you look within throughout the United States, and we're all into this now. We want things now, and it's this attitude that we have.
Instant gratification, entitlement. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 64% of the population here in the United States is considered obese, and we're coming across with all these problems, and with our children killing children, and our own people killing our own people, and I mean Native people too. I mean, majority of our people were fighting obesity, heart disease, and diabetes, alcoholism, drug addiction. All these things are going on, within the Native peoples too, because all this we're getting sucked into. Again, the now, and we don't want to take time just to sit and to to tell a story, to share with each other, to have that connection with each other, what is meaningful in our lives. And there's so many people within the world, especially here in the States, I believe that we're always looking for what is that meaning. Again, we're trying to make a connection, like, who am I? We're asking that question, who am I? What's my purpose? What's
and
my
the perennial wisdom other? Through the ages, no matter from whence it sprang, always addresses that, always has some kind of answer for that. You're mentioning that you felt Jesus was a wonderful storyteller.
Absolutely.
And carrying on with the same wisdom.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can look back. Sure, I'm a native man, a native person. And I look back at what Christianity and organized religion has done to the native peoples. And I was very angry. I was mad about that. But however, I know that anger doesn't work in this world. We have our jails.
It's part of
full.
What got us to the problem
exactly.
in the first place. Yeah.
We have enough of our angry people in jails, on the streets, and just blaming, pointing fingers at this. It just doesn't work. And so I asked an elder. I went up to this elder who is an ordained minister. I said, I need to ask you this. What is it about this book here? And I pointed to the Bible. What is it about this book? And he goes, our ways and the ways in this book, same. Mm-hmm. Same. It's just that we come from this oral tradition where we don't write things down. We pass it on orally through stories or our artwork. And he is saying all those things, they just wrote it down for us, if we take a look at it. And Jesus was a wonderful teacher, a wonderful storyteller. And if we follow his word and what he does, life will be easier. I mean, even if we don't believe in God or anything, or Jesus or any of these prophets, we still have to live a life of truth. We still have to be respectful to each other. We still have to... murder isn't good, cheating on your spouse, all these things, lying isn't good. We still have to tell the
because
truth.
Because it tears up your own spirit.
Exactly, exactly.
Behave,
even if you don't believe
misbehave.
In these things, you still have to follow these basic life rules.
Why? Because they work.
Because they work. And
lead to happiness and fulfillment and a sense of peace. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. And it's, and following God, the Creator, Tikiankawa, Tikachlia, Hashiginya, whoever you might want to call him, just makes it easier. And for me, and I want to get back to, again, being a Tlingit. I travel with my flutes, I travel with my drum, or my regalia, and we're talking about the spirit and our ancestors and God, Creator. We could say God is Tikiankawa, but when someone passes on, the clan, their spirit is in the regalia. Their spirit is in the drum. When I sing a song, and wherever that song comes from, that spirit is in that drum, is in my regalia. When I wear my shakyat or my robe or whatever, their spirit is there and it travels with me. And then when I introduced myself earlier and I acknowledged the spirits because they are with me right now, here, which allows me and it gives me the strength to be able to go out and do what I need to do. There are some times I open myself up, I'm going, where did that come from? And somebody, I'll be doing a presentation and I'll say something that I don't know where that came from. I just open myself up. I'm just an instrument, open myself up to let the spirit flow through. And even with my music, whatever I do, I open myself up to that. I think we all have that capability.
I do too.
We all have that capability, but we just shut it down. I think we start to open it up a little bit, and it becomes a little frightening. And so we just close it down again. But we all have that ability. Just open ourselves up to the spirit that walks in all things.
But I think when we come face to face with those mysteries, that's part of the hunger. That's what we've been searching for.
You know what? I was a naturalist up in Alaska on the tour ships that went out for the whale watches.
Oh, interesting.
And it was wonderful. And I'd tell stories and I'd talk about the land. And I saw those people. We see so many people coming up to Alaska, looking at the beauty, looking at the land, looking at all these things, the whales, the deer, the eagles, the glaciers. And when I'm watching them, look at these things. I'm watching them, and they're crying. They're crying. And so many times they've said to me, especially elders or older people, they say, I've just been missing out. I've just been missing out on all this my whole life. And I've been, this is what I've been looking for.
Back into the arms of Mother Nature and finding that nurturing.
Of that nurturing of the land, of the Spirit of God. And even when we drive down the highway, I-5 here, my wife and I, we're looking for hawks.
Mm.
We love to see the hawks, and we say, there's a hawk, or an eagle, or a
bird,
or the crows, or even the trees. But that keeps us, our awareness, to keep looking at. And this one time, she was driving with her sister, and she's always going, there's a hawk, and there's a hawk, there's a hawk. And her sister says, what is it with the hawks? And my wife told her, when was the last time you saw one? And they're all over.
And they have something to say.
And we have something to say, and we just keep ourselves open and aware to these things. And ask yourself that question. I had a friend of mine. She came up to me, and just because, I don't know, maybe I'm native or whatever it was, and I have this inner wisdom or this connection to spirit. But anyways, she came up to me, and she goes, what's it mean? I was driving down the road, and this robin kept driving right next, or flying right next to me. And my car window, and I was wondering, what is this? Next thing you know, that robin flies into my window. And she came up to me, she asked me, what is it? Is there a meaning to that? I go, I don't know. You tell me, is there a meaning to it? And she kept asking me, and then I asked her this question, what were you thinking right at that moment? And she thought about it, and she thought about, I was thinking about my mother. And her mother, at that time, had cancer. And she did pass away. Her mother passed away. And to open ourselves to that spirit that's all around us, when you see that hawk, at that moment, what are you thinking? When you see something of beauty at that moment, what are you thinking? Because God, the Creator, is always talking to us.
Always through many mouthpieces.
Through many mouthpieces, to many symbols, signs, but just to keep ourselves open to that. And it's out there. It's out there.
And how our instruments speak to us too. The drum, the flute, and let's let them speak. He's picking up a flute. This is a beautiful red cedar flute with a bird as part of that.
Let's stop up here. Let's see what it says.
So I bet you're one of those people, because I've met a few, who go out and start playing the flute, and the birds will come by and start responding, carry on a dialogue with you in the flute.
You know what? I go out there, I'm of the Raven clan, and I learn how to communicate or watch or dance the Raven dance by going out and talking to the Ravens. And when I go out there, the Ravens
flock around.
They love listening to the third out there going, what is this? And they'll talk to you and they'll respond back and forth to you. And again, I use these flutes hopefully to help assist people in their healing and their journey. And it's just a gift that I've received. And there's many things. I just use whatever comes to me to assist people in their healing, in their journey, to help them discover again their story. And it's a gift, and I'm blessed. I get to go around, tell stories, teach workshops, work with people, and act, play music, and
life is a performance theater.
Life is a performance, a theater,
and when it's your job, it's even better. Yeah.
Exactly, and so and again with Raven, and through stories. Stories, again, we get back to Jesus. Jesus was a great storyteller, a healer, and he healed through stories.
You said that you can go back and read the journals of the early explorers here, and they said...
Yeah, well... There's this...
knew God, even though they had no Bible at that time.
Yeah, the explorers that came in amongst the native people, and they saw the native peoples here, and there was a statement that said that these people know of God in the Bible before even reading it. They are aware of it, and they live it. And within the Thinking culture, there's no word for religion or even art, because it was just a way of life. That's just how life was. So there was,
it was everywhere, not differentiated from or separated out.
That's just how life was. And so there was no word for it or any, yeah, that's just how life was.
I would think that, you know, and I noticed the similar foundational worldview of so many indigenous cultures and so many of the perennial wisdom traditions, because it's all springing from the same source. When you connect to spirit, this is the kind of welling up of insight and understanding and connection that happens. And so it may be expressed a little bit differently, but it's all saying pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, you go through the truths out there. And again, living out in the forest, in the woods, I spent quite a bit of time out there, again, discovering who am I. And once you live out in nature and do these things, you discover there's just some simple truths out there of, you look at meditation, sitting there and listening, a belief in God, and the Word. And you go through all the religions or philosophers or prophets throughout the world, and they all have these very similar messages throughout the world, native peoples, indigenous peoples throughout the world. And again, through stories.
What does being part of the Raven clan mean? Who is the Raven to the Tlingit people? Do you have a story to share on that? And I have a question. When we talked with some native Hawaiian elders, they were saying that each family had a particular animal totem. Because I said, what is an animal totem to you? And they said it might be the shark, it might be the eel, it might be a helper, but that their elders would actually go out and go to the seashore, and the shark would come up, and they could mentally talk with the shark, and that shark would warn them, oh, this is a good day to go out and fish, or this isn't a good day, or it would help them fish. It would actually be a helper and assist them. And they would never eat shark, that family, if that was their helper. But they had a very special and a very direct communication and dialogue and friendship with that animal. Is that similar to what the Raven is? Or
the Raven. I am of the Raven clan, and I love the Ravens. And you go up to Alaska, and if you observe the Ravens, they're beautiful, they're smart, they are definitely the tricksters. Amongst the Tlingit people, the Raven is the trickster. and is the teacher, the all-known, magical, spiritual person, but also just the very devious, mean, the spiteful or just selfish being also that we all have Raven in us, the all different aspects of Raven. And so I am of the Raven clan, and I definitely identify with the Raven and that part of who I am. And as far as identifying with the land and the animals, I was a tree planter. I planted trees up in Alaska for several years. And again, if you open yourself up to this communication, especially out there, you have to. You just, things just are just natural and just more pure out there in the forest.
You're surrounded by it.
You're surrounded by it. Exactly.
Open up to talk to it.
And then, this one time I was walking down a trail, and this goose lands right in front of me in the trail and just starts honking and yelling at me and talking to me. And I'm going, what is it that you want? What are you trying to tell me? And then it flies off. And as I walked down the trail, there was a bear right in the middle of the trail. And if I kept going, I would have ran right directly into the bear without knowing it.
But you were on alert because you got a warning.
But then again, I was that communication. And then the ravens. Flying around in a circle around this one spot out there in the forest. And I was going, what is that? So I stopped. And then as I went up there slower, sure enough, there's a bear there in my path again. And so do the animals communicate to us? Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
And to the trees? Absolutely. I tell people that if you're having a hard time, go out and tell it to a tree.
Oh, put your back against
the
tree.
Go tell it to a rock. Go tell it to the water. Go tell it to the sky or to a raven, and they'll listen to you. And that way it'll help you release all that, whatever it is that you need to release at that time. And people who are afraid of public speaking, I'll say, go tell a story to a tree. Go tell that story to the rock and start from there. And again, with Raven, is he a teacher? Absolutely. I got a story for you here.
Okay.
We're talking about stories. I want to tell you a story.
Please, I was waiting.
Neat way, on a good way, yes. Your way, canonique. Raven was walking along the beach, and it was the beginning of time. The whole world was dark. The stars, the moon, and sun were kept in boxes by a wealthy old man who lived at the headwaters of the Nass River. The fishermen of the night told Raven of these treasures, and so Raven, he went to the house of Nashakakawu. Raven saw Nashakakawu's beautiful daughter. She was drinking water from the stream. Raven, he changed his spirit into a tiny spruce needle, and when the beautiful daughter drank, she swallowed Raven. And soon, Raven grew inside of her, and she became pregnant, and she gave birth to Raven in the form of a human child. Well, everyone loved this little child, everyone, except the mother-in-law. It was the mother-in-law who knew it was really Raven. Because if you've seen Raven's eyes are always darting back and forth, up and down, always curious, looking around. Everyone loved this little child except the mother-in-law. And today, you will still find that still nobody listens to the mother-in-law.
Well, everyone loved this little baby. He grew up fast and strong.
And soon Raven, he had a plan. He was going to get the stars, the moon, and sun for all the people of the world. Raven, he pointed to those boxes in each of the corner of the house, and he started to cry.
The old man, Nashakakawu, goes, "Slick, slick, no, you can't have that box." Raven keeps crying. Like all grandfathers, Nashakakawu, he brought the boxes down and placed it in front of baby Raven. And baby Raven, he played on those boxes. He slept on those boxes. He danced on those boxes. And he opened those boxes, and out of the boxes flew the stars and the moon into the nighttime sky forever. There's another box, the one that contained the sun.
Raven, baby Raven, cried. The old man, Nashakakau, goes, Tlech, Tlech, no, you can't have that box. But Raven cried and cried and cried and cried. And soon all the people thought he might die because he made himself sick. And it was the beautiful daughter. She picked up her son, said, Father, is there anything worth more than the life of your grandson?
Ah, Gunachish, says Nashakakau. You've taught me a good lesson.
Now Shakakawu takes that box down and he places it in front of baby Raven. And he tells the people, watch my grandson, make sure he doesn't open that box.
Raven is very patient.
Raven played on that box. He danced on that box. He slept on that box. He ate on that box. Soon the people, they became tired. And Raven, he opened that box when nobody was looking. And out of that box through the sun into the nighttime sky forever. Ah, Nashakakau yells out, Ah, Kadi! Ah, Kadi! My precious object's gone forever. Oh, Raven. When nobody was looking, Raven, he changed himself back into his bird form again and he took the last box, the one that is called the Box of Daylight. And he flew out the smoke hole with it. Raven was walking along the beach and he comes up to the fishermen of the night and he says, feed me. They had a fire and they were cooking and Raven's always hungry. He said, feed me. The fishermen of the night said, oh, you're just Raven. Go away, go away. And Raven, he goes, you treat me this way after I brought you the stars, the moon, and the sun. I've got the most precious and beautiful gift of all here in this box. And you treat me that way, now feed me. And still, the fishermen of the night denied him. Raven, he became angry. He opened that box just a little bit. And daylight flashed in the world. The fishermen of the night, they became a little frightened, but they knew that it was Raven. It's just one of his tricks. Raven says, feed me. But the fishermen of the night still denied him. Raven became angry. He opens that box. And daylight flashed throughout the world. The fishermen of the night became frightened and they ran away and hid. Some of them hid in the forest. Some hid up in the sky. Some hid down into the waters. Some hid in the earth. The ones who hid in the forest became all the animals of the world. The ones who hid up in the sky became all the birds of the world. The ones who hid down in the earth became the insects. The ones in the water became all the fish and the creatures of the oceans. And then there are the ones who stood up straight and tall. They became the human beings. And they saw their world clearly for the first time. And they marveled at the beauty of it. And this is how Raven brought daylight to the world.
That was a lovely story. It was a creation story, and Raven played a central role there.
It was a creation story of Raven. And again, I use that story for people because we all have this light inside of us. We all have this light inside of us, and sometimes we keep it in a box. And we're afraid to let that light out and shine and share it with the world so that the whole world can see it. And to let that light out and shine. Because once we let that light out, then we can see our world clearly for the first time.
That's your mission in life, and that's, as a life coach, what you're trying to encourage others to do, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. To encourage people to let your light shine. We need that in this world. We need it to go out and just to share that light, to share that love, to bless other people with who you are. We all are unique and beautiful people, but to share that with other people, with this human race, with the world, to let our light shine, just like Raven. And again, people know they don't even know my name, but they know me as Raven. And so it's.
And we'll hear more from Raven Jean Tagavan when we come back. More light shining, more guitar, drum, flute, and some goat nails to shake. All that's coming up. I'm Laura Lee. Welcome to Conversation for Exploration. Hi, I'm your host, Laura Lee. In studio with me, we continue with Gene Tagaban, a member of the Tlingit tribe. He's a storyteller, life coach, keynote speaker, actor, dancer, and musician. This is hour two. Please listen to hour one if you haven't. It gives a lot on Gene's background, philosophy, ancestry. And we're continuing with more story and song.
Off in the distance, another brother warrior down, bleeding through his pores, sweating alcohol. Dreaming of his victories, Junior lies there with a smile. Here lies a warrior who's traveled many miles. Off in the distance, drums vibrate through the wind. These are people we must defend. Brother, sister, fighting for the dignity. Where are the warriors of this history? War cry. Talking in a language from battles on the streets. Cavalry is coming to take him away. Brother Warrior Pete, you gotta get him to his feet. Men in blue take Junior for a ride. Never knew what hit him. Alcohol inside. Brother Warrior Pete, you can hear him from the street, yelling out his pain, his war cry, war cry. Circle around him, bring him to his feet. Sing a song of hope and honor, we all join hands. We will continue on our grandfather's land. Off in the distance, drums vibrate through the sky. This is our land. You cannot deny. Brother, sister, fighting for their dignity. We are the warriors of this history. War cry. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey. Oh, hey.
Oh, hey, oh, hey. What was that song? It was lovely.
That song is a song that I got when I was walking through the streets in Juneau, Alaska. And I went through a park, and I saw these two gentlemen, Native men, who live on the streets. One was laying there, passed out, and the other one was there trying to get him up. And I knew each one of them personally. And the police came by, picked him up, and the other one was trying to stop him and take care of his partner there, and the police took the one who was passed out away, took him in his car, and Pete was sitting there on the streets alone, just bummed out, and I know who he was. I know his family. So I went up to him and comforted him and sang a song. We both sat there and sang a song. We talked for a while, and that's how I got that song. And it just came to me, and so.
I want to ask you something. A friend of mine had an interesting insight, and I want to check it out. He said that the West and the Native cultures abuse each other's sacraments. So we bring alcohol over here, which was, the blood of Christ and used in sacrament, wine and all of that. And Native peoples abuse that. It wasn't part of their tradition, and it leads to ruination. And on the other hand, we come over here and the tobacco, we abuse that, turn it into cigarettes, leave out the sacramental part of it, and die of lung cancer, a leading cause of death here. So is that true? Do Native peoples not abuse tobacco? It's mostly used as a sacrament, or?
Again, traditionally, we did use it as to pray, as an offering, tobacco.
And why tobacco? What was it about? Something about the smoke that carried the prayer up to the
heavens? Tobacco
was
a very strong plant, very strong. Has the strength in the roots of it, and just the tobacco. And again, my background doesn't come from, that's more of a stateside belief. And up in Alaska, we...
Hard to grow tobacco up there.
It's hard to grow tobacco up there. But still, again, with the smoke, with the sage, we burn sweetgrass, we burn cedar, and they do have a sage up there. And again, we offer it to as a cleansing of our spirits, a cleansing of our energy, as an offering.
It's all related, burning a dried leaf.
Yeah. And we see the eagle. When you see that eagle flying, doing circles up in the sky, it's cutting a hole in the sky for your prayers to go up.
Oh, interesting.
At that moment. And so when you... Now you'll be looking, you'll see an eagle. And when you see that eagle, send your prayers up there. Let your prayers go, your thoughts go up there with that eagle through that hole in the sky. And so, yeah, we definitely, all these things were used traditionally, and now people are smoking and using alcohol in excess. And that's just getting away from a lot of our beliefs, our values, and knowledge of who we are. And also we find a friend of mine, we were walking through, we saw in a pawn shop, an old robe. And we went in there and we took a look at it. And we bought it back from them for $150. And this robe was priceless to the clan. And so we took it back to the clan. But again, our youth, our young people, or not even young people, they don't understand that. What they did, they just sold their grandfather. They just sold their uncles or their aunties or their ancestors. They just sold them. And that's again, our belief that we have. And that's very, very strong in our belief as a people.
Tell me about what to do with those artifacts that are so much a part of their makers and the people who use them. And when they die, I've seen... photographs of totem poles, just one after the other, and some of them all kind of rotted away, and that it was explained to me it was okay for the totem pole, for nature to take it back. That's fine. And they're taking bones that archaeologists want to put in museums. It's very important to Native people to put them back in the ground so they can return to the dust from whence they came, I would assume, that it's okay for nature to reclaim these things, and they're meant to just decay on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But not to necessarily preserve them and stick them in a in a museum. What am I on target here?
A lot of our peoples, they'll let museums take care of their artifacts and display them.
Thank you. It's because we all want to see them and enjoy them.
Yeah, exactly, just to let them. But when they come and they just take them away and take them to other places. Up in Alaska, the Juneau Art Museum up there, the State Museum, you can hold your artifacts there. And whenever you want to use them, just go there and
get them. Oh, that's a nice arrangement.
And then you can use these. You can use them. Because you know that it's safe because fires happen. And a lot of people break into houses just to get this regalia because it's worth a lot of money.
Oh, sold to private collectors.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, but it is to let these things, like the totem poles and all that, just go back into the earth. That's where we came from. That's the land of our ancestors. And to just, to let it go back to the earth. And it's all recycled. It's all recycled. It's all
came from earth, let it return to earth. What about decommissioning a drum, say? I'm wondering about that. There's some debate in Egypt whether many of the carvings of the gods and goddesses that are so carefully chiseled out were done by the priests when they left the temple for the last time to deactivate them, for example, as opposed to, you know, vandals coming in and defacing them. And I've heard that, you know, a shaman, when he dies, the drum can't be used any longer and it'll be slashed or something. What's among your tradition? How does that work? Because you said these objects hold that power of that person.
They do. They hold the power. They hold the spirit and the strength of that our ancestors, and that's many of the times too. They will exactly that. They'll slash them or they'll put them away, and hopefully they're a place that our ancestors, they didn't realize that this world was going to grow in this way, and they would bury these people in places where they didn't know where to find them. At least that's what they thought. That they would never be found. And so that power and that strength would be there. And still there's artifacts from the medicine people, the shamans. And a friend of mine, he has a collection of these things, and he was telling me how powerful these objects are. And in fact, he's afraid to put them on and many of the things. Again, he keeps them in museums because they're safer there.
Mm-hmm.
And also, he doesn't really want them in his house. And they're revered there. He doesn't want them because they do have power. They do have strength. And they do have that spirit and that healing spirit too. And if you don't, our belief too is if you don't understand that power, then it can do you some harm.
A friend of mine had a whole beautiful collection of African masks. And he had hung them all in a room. And he said after a while, he just couldn't go in the room. And he had to, you know, give them away to someone who could house them better. He said that it was art not meant to be lived with. It had a different purpose. It wasn't just art. It was something else.
And traditionally, too, these artifacts, you would not display them on the wall. They weren't there for display. You would keep them safely in a trunk, wrapped up. Mm. And then the only time you brought them out is when you used them. It was time to use them to heal for ceremony or whatever. Other than that, they were always placed carefully in a trunk and kept there and in a safe place. You always knew that they were there. Because these things, again, it was, as we call art now, we didn't have a word for art. That it was just, again, a way of life. And these all these things had purpose. We didn't display them because we wanted to show everybody our artwork or how proud we are, which we are a proud people. They had a purpose. Now you see paddles displayed on the wall or masks and things. And the paddles were put away carefully and taken care of. Masks were put away. Drums might be kept out because you're always singing.
Mm-hmm.
And to understand that and have that respect for these things also.
It was lovely to see in the Tlingit performance, putting on the raven headdress, the raven robe, and doing the dance of the raven. And I began to understand the deeper roots and the shamanic roots of theater. This was to step inside raven or to invite raven in and to become raven for that time, to have that meeting in that spiritual dimension of raven.
Our potlatch
is a shamanic ceremony.
And even just to stories were told in potlatch is theater, much like Tlingit people in the longhouses, they would create stories and recreate the stories through the use of songs, dance, movements, and masks. And they would wear the masks and create, again, it was theater, and also to stories. They are healing stories, and to bring that to the people, bringing it to the people, and the people who are watching this going on, this performance, if you want to call it, or event, they are touched, and they are, and it's just this reciprocation. It's really hard to explain unless you're there. And even when our events, when we were with the theater, when I had my theater, we'd always want to, it was more of an experience. When the people came in, said, okay, we're going to share with them this experience.
Step outside your daily lives and into another.
And step into this experience that we're bringing to you. And our whole purpose and our whole focus was not as entertainment, but hopefully that these stories had meaning, these songs have meaning, and that they can feel that meaning, and hopefully
and
maybe we could
you.
We can assist them in their life, in their story.
I have to say that you said you have to be there to experience it, and one of the best ways to do that in a public fashion is to go to what's the museum in Vancouver, British Columbia, that has the beautiful longhouse and just a wonderful display, and everything's so beautifully lit, and it's dark, and you step inside, and you've got the music playing in the background, and the drum beats, and the chants, and it's like you just sit there, and you just, you settle in, and you can just be at one with that.
I haven't been to that museum yet. But
everyone
keeps telling me.
It's a big major museum.
Yeah,
British
they keep
museum,
telling me that, Gene, you need to go down there and see this museum. And I'm going to do that. I have a lot of friends up there. But then again, I mean, it is. It's here I am this year. I'm wearing jeans and my boots and this and a T-shirt here and living in this modern day.
And your hair down your back. And
my black hair and with the little tints of gray hair, my wisdom hair, as I call them. And I'm living in this modern world today. But yet, these things, my culture, my songs, my dance, somebody asked me, so Gene, how do you do that? How do you keep this balance when, as far as being a native man and walking in this world and living this modern day society that we have here? And I told her that I pray every day because it's easy. The easy thing is because we're surrounded by this society now, it's pretty easy to live in this. But the difficult part, again, teaching our kids is keeping our tradition alive and to dance that and to sing that and to have that pride within you. Even to this day, I can walk out of the studio right now in the parking lot. I'll go to the middle of Bellevue. I'll go to the middle of Seattle. I've stood in the middle of New York and I was belt out a song. I was sing out a song loud.
It's a form of prayer, isn't it? It can be.
Absolutely. And people will look at me and but then again, that's
probably throw dollars at you.
They probably would. I might go try it. But then that's, I'm proud of who I am. Because that's who I am.
For all of us, finding that connection and not being, to step out of the distractions of this world on a daily basis and to make that connection is so important for us. And I think I'm not a therapist, but I would think that of all the people out there going to therapy in growing numbers or taking drugs to numb out or whatever, if they would just stop and do that, they would find that path to healing, for heaven's sakes.
Just take some time.
Don't talk about your problems and dwell in them and dig it deeper. Find a new vibration. Find a new road. Find new inspiration. Find some new headspace.
Yeah, just take the time to
connect back to the source, the mother.
Connect with yourself, too. Connect with yourself. We're always trying to disconnect with ourselves. We're looking at ourselves from a distance, but we're afraid to step into our own body. And just take some time to breathe. To
ceremony.
Just sing and to have that ceremony. I mean, each morning, everyone, we always have ritual. We always have ceremony. It might be getting up, drinking that cup of coffee, or even smoking a cigarette, or whatever your ritual or ceremony is. Create that ceremony, that ritual in your life. Get up, say a prayer, sing a song, or do it in a healthy way, and to seek that wellness, and seek that the spirit, seek the help, the healthiness, and make that choice. Again, we're right in our story. So how do you want to live your life? It's your choice. Nobody's making you do this or do that. It's your choice on how you live your life. So seek it out and create ceremony, create ritual in your life that is, again, it's healthy. It's health-based. It's wellness, and it focuses on that. And take some time to just sit and breathe and to sing and to laugh. Not enough people are laughing in this world and to enjoy each other. I mean, here, I'm talking with you, this, again, native man right here, and I'm talking to this blue-eyed, blonde, beautiful, white woman here, and still, even when we're off the air, we're sharing these commonalities, and it's this of connection of spirit and all that, and it's a wonderful thing. And just to share that bridge again, and you're adding to my story, I'm adding to your story, and you have a wonderful opportunity here to talk to so many different people and to learn so many things, and to you, I'm
sure.
That's
why I'm here.
Exactly. And that's why you do what you do, and why I do what I do, so I can connect and do with other people, and hopefully I can make a difference. And one reason I do this too is because I need it. I want to grow.
Right.
I want to grow. I want to continue on and grow and learn. And so that's why I do what I do. So I can, if you want to learn something, teach it.
It's so important to take that time one-on-one, you and spirit, you and the mysteries. And it's also important to take that time to share in a ceremonial fashion, a storytelling fashion, a communal fashion, whatever it is, with one another. And you were telling me during the break, before we began this hour, how you have observed whales and ravens and others gathered together over a dead member mm-hmm. of their species, like they were having a funeral, like they were having a ceremony. Even the animals conduct ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me.
Yeah, there was this one time I was walking through the forest, and I came to the edge, and there's this fence, and I stopped, and I watched all these ravens. Usually they don't really gather that much in groups, and they're just all these, I don't know how many, just a gathering of ravens are sitting there and just squawking, making all kinds of noises and sounds, and then they're just silent. They're just silent. And then I was curious. I got up and walked over there and disturbed them all, and they all flew away. And when I looked over on the other side of this fence, there's a dead raven. And to me, they're honoring one of their members. They're acknowledging one of their members there. And this one time, too, I saw an eagle. Eagle was flying around. And I was looking up there, and all these ravens were on this eagle, just diving at him and going after this eagle. And I looked up there, and I looked closer, and this eagle had a raven. And so they're watching after their brothers. And I've seen that happen with the whales. There was an injured whale out there in southeast Alaska one time. It was blowing, blood was coming out of the mist of its blowhole, and it was not doing well. And I watched, because I was a naturalist on whale watches, and I was watching this whale, and all the naturalists and the whale watch boats, we were all keeping tabs on this whale and communicating back and forth. And then we, later on, other whales just gathered around it. And what happened is this whale, eventually it did pass on, and these whales were supporting it and carrying it. And later on that day, I got reports from another storyteller, a friend of mine. She says, yeah, she saw the whales. They were carrying their brother or sister.
In a procession.
In a procession, they were carrying it. And just supporting one on each side of her or him. And we found out later, it was the whale was injured. It got hit by a boat.
Oh,
is what happened. And so it was, but they were acknowledging their family. And you see this happening with the orcas and the keet. We call them the keet, the killer whales too. And it's just about acknowledging their loss, their loved ones, and each other.
Ceremony across the board.
Exactly.
Important thing to do.
And there are teachers. There are animals, there are elders, there are teachers. If we look back far enough, we're all tribal. There are teachers, all of them.
It's important to remember we're part of that web of life.
Absolutely.
And just one more member upon it.
Mm-hmm.
We continue with more story and song with Jing Tagaban. Again, his email address, summerfieldraven@yahoo.com. What do you want to hear from people who listen? Hello, enjoy, do your thing, come and do an event. When is your next workshop?
I'd love to share with them. Come and talk to their kids, themselves, the organizations, and just to share what is it that they want, what do you want, and what do you need, and if I can assist you in whatever to share with you.
That process of awakening, it's what we're, the journey we're all on.
Oh, exactly, yeah. To help you tell your story. That's what it's all about. I'm there to assist you, and let's tell a story.
And we'll continue just after this. I'm Laura Lee. Let's continue our conversation with Jing Tagaban, storyteller and musician. This is what you've all been waiting for, I know. I'm just going to ask Jing to tell stories for the next 20 minutes or so and sing us some songs.
Gnashtish. There's a village. A village in the old, old days. This village was going through hard times, bad times. Once, it had been a great village. Many people, strong clans. But now, they're all gone except for three brothers. Three brothers. Deep in the darkest part of the forest, there lived a giant of a man. He was a cannibal giant. And at nighttime, he crept into the village, carried away all the women and children, carried them to his house and ate them like animals. All the hunters did all they could to stop this cannibal, but he was bigger, stronger, faster, craftier than all of them, and they too fell prey to this cannibal giant. And now there's only three brothers left. These three brothers, they talked amongst themselves, and they knew they had to stop the cannibal, for it was a matter of time before he went to the other villages or the rest of the world and fed on them. They had to stop the cannibal, but they still had to live, and they still had to feed themselves. The oldest brother, he went off to hunt. And when he never returned, the other two brothers knew what had happened. So the other two brothers, they stayed awake and alert. They kept themselves armed and ready. But days passed and night, and sooner or later they had to sleep. And when the youngest brother awoke, he was alone. And he knew in his heart he must face the cannibal. Alone. So he began to prepare himself. He went to the home of his uncles, and there he grabbed bows and arrows. And these bows and arrows, they represented the wisdom that he learned from his uncles. and he took some devil's club, some sach, and placed it into a medicine pouch around his neck. And this had cleansing powers. If he could think good thoughts of everyone, especially his enemies, this would open a door for the spirits to talk to him and give him the words that he needed to defeat the giant. Then he went to sleep, and he dreamed a dream that he had heard the everlasting voice of Hashiginya speaking to him. And that voice told him that there is nothing that I can give you to defeat this cannibal giant, that the power lies in being who you are and knowing who you are. You have the power to defeat this cannibal. But if you kill this cannibal, you must treat his body with respect or he'll come back to life again. When that young boy, he awoke, he found himself in the house of the cannibal, and it was dark and it was cold. And although it was this dark, dark place, he knew what he must do. He saw in the corner of the house as a cannibal feeding on the blood and flesh of his people. And he stood up and he saw that cannibal and he said, "Never again, no more. Never again, no more will you feed on the flesh and blood of my people." And that cannibal giant looked at him, licked his lips, and that young boy, he remembered he had to go to the cliffs that he played at as a boy, the rocks, the waves below that cliff. He knew he had to go to that cliff. He ran through the forest, and that cannibal giant was right behind him, running through that forest. He got to the cliff, and there was an alder tree sticking out over the cliff. He jumped, and he grabbed that tree, and the cannibal giant came to reach for him, but he was just out of his reach, so the cannibal giant, too, leaped, and he grabbed another tree, but the tree was old, and it was old, and it fell, and it broke. And the cannibal giant fell to his death on the rocks below. Treat the enemy of the body of your enemy with respect. So he built a fire and he placed the body of the cannibal upon the fire in the same way he would if it was somebody that he loved. And he sat on the beach alone thinking about how the cannibal injured him, thinking about how the cannibal killed and took away all his friends and his family. And his heart filled with rage and grief. And at that moment, he forgot what the voice told him to treat the body of your enemy with respect. He grabbed a large club, and he started to hit the body of the cannibal. "You have not felt enough pain. You have not suffered enough." And each time he hit that cannibal, sparks flew up into the sky. If you don't treat the body of your enemy with respect, he'll come back to life again. Each one of those sparks came back to life in the form of a mosquito. And to this day, the cannibal still lives and feeds on the flesh and blood of our people. But our elders still talk about the cannibal, that the cannibal still lives in the form of alcohol and drugs, of violence, of abuse. Still lives in prejudice and anger and fear and pain. The cannibal is all around us. But if you believe in who you are and you be who you are, the power to defeat that cannibal is within you. Gonna chish. And that story, I use that story still in my life today. Many of these stories that we have, that we use, these traditional and old stories, are still there. They are still there, and we use them in our lives. We use them, and they are still relevant in our lives today. And I use many of these stories. And sometimes I write these other stories, more contemporary stories. And I'd like to share one of these stories with you right now. She's been sitting in the same place for days, months, maybe years, watching her favorite shows on the television. With remote in hand, she flips through the channels. Topic for today, partners who cheat. She flips down, next channel. Controlling spouses down, next channel. Troubled wives down. out of control, eating, down, down, abused, down, 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 abandoned, down, 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 hopeless, down, 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 topic after topic, channel after channel, the list goes on and on and on, always looking for something new, something better, something. Never the change in the channel, above 13, always too frightened of what she might see, hear, or feel, though in her mind, her dreams always looking, wondering, something new, something better, something. One morning, she awoke to the ravens calling, "Cow-cow-wow-wow." She accidentally hit channel 21. What was this? Maya Angelou? Maya Angelou reading, "I heard the caged bird sing." She sat up, she listened, she heard, she watched. Something new, something better, something. Topic, women of hope. Featured, Mother Teresa, Oprah, Wilma Mankiller, Rosa Parks, Winona LaDuke, Eleanor Roosevelt, Elizabeth Paratovich. The list went on and on and on. All women of power, all women of beauty, all women of spirit. She watched for hours, days, weeks. She kept changing the channels up, up, up. The numbers growing larger, her spirit growing larger. One day she rose from that place, opened the door and stepped outside. The sun shined on her face, the rain fell at her feet, rainbows danced in the sky. She laughed, she cried, she sang, and she grabbed her kids and hopped into her baby blue 1972 Cadillac Eldorado convertible. And she drove, and she drove, and she drove, and she drove, and she drove. She sought out women of hope. She learned from women of hope. She grew, her spirit grew, something new, something better, something. One day, on channel 2002, topic, women warriors. And there she stood tall and proud, telling her story. She stood with 10 other women who heard, who saw the same program as she did. These women spoke of pride, beauty, leadership, spirit. She came home. Something new, something better, something beautiful. The kids walked in smiling, happy, and strong. She was home. She was home. She never sits around feeling hopeless, helpless, or sad anymore. She sits in her place singing, laughing, and telling stories, healing, waiting for those women who have traveled many miles to see her. Women warrior. And again, I say, Gunashish, Gunashish, Gunashish. And these are just some of the things I share, I like to share with the people of who I am as a Native man, who I am as a Tlingit Native man, the stories that I have. Because I'm willing to share these things as a Native person with all the people. It's time that we shared these things, because as Native people, we have many, many, many things to share, to assist people to heal this world, to heal this earth. Because this earth, this place, it is ill. And we just look around us. Look around us. And what is it, the story that we want to leave? What story do we want to tell of ourselves? My grandma. My grandma, strong grandma. We called her Big Grandma, but she was really about 4'10" on a good day. And I talked about our ancestors being around us all the time. And I know my grandma is there with me all the time. We're sitting around watching The Price is Right. My grandma, my great grandma and me, I wonder what she thinks. She doesn't speak English very well, but she can talk up a storm in Tlingit. Many things have changed in her life, cars, radio, television, music, man on the moon. More ways to harm each other, less ways to love. We walk together to a party. It's an Indian party. Her friends are gone. She's in her 90s. She still talks to them, though. We've been up all night. It's 3:30 a.m. She's still going strong, and I'm tired. That's how she is. Up late. Up early. Wants to experience all she can, she says. She tells me stories. Sometimes she forgets she's telling me a story. It's all a story. One day, she looks me straight in the eye and says, "Son, you learn something every day. Look at me. Look how old I am. I can't remember. Anyway, son, you learn something every day."
We sit and watch the hummingbirds eat. Ah, I love hummingbirds, she says. They're really little fairies watching over us. I sure do love hummingbirds. You see that rainbow, son? Think good thoughts every time you see one, and one day you'll get that pot of gold. I already gave all mine away. And I asked, Grandma, how do you make adobo? She says, oh, you add this, and then you add that, and you cook it on medium. Well, you can smell it in every room in the house. It's done. I bought a ticket to go see her, and I leave next week. I got a call. She went to sleep. She's still sleeping. At the services, they had a feather in her hand, the one that I gave her, the one that she got up and danced with. Get up, Grandma. Dance. Dance. I'm dancing now, about to go on stage. There's a hummingbird watching through the window. I sure do love hummingbirds. And that spirit of my grandma, she still lives in me. The spirit of my grandma lives in me. The spirit of our grandmas and our ancestors live in us. They're watching over us, taking care of us. And as we walk throughout this world, we have that choice. We can spread that spirit out to other people and share that. And it reminds me of a story. You got me going now. I can just keep going and going and going. And the story goes like this. Each way or the coot way eight, your way kind of unique. Raven was walking along the beach, and he looks far out there into the ocean, and he sees an island of fire has risen from the ocean, throwing flames into the dark sky. Raven, he wants to get that fire, that flame. He wants to get it for all the people of the world. And he looks around. He says no spirit. He sees no spirit around. So Raven wants to get that flame for all the people of the world. But Raven's not a good long-distance flyer. Raven's brother-in-law, Hawk, comes walking along. Hawk, proud of his long, straight beak. Raven asks his brother, can you help me? And Hawk, he goes, what you want me to do? I want you to fly out there to that island and get me that fire. How am I going to do that? Says Hawk. I'll fix it for you, says Raven. Raven goes up in a tree and grabs a branch and he puts it in Hawk's beak and he puts some pitch at the end of that branch and he tells Hawk, now fly through that flame 4 times and on the 4th time bring it back to me. He tells Hawk, Yi Guai Quan, my brother, be brave. You do this for all the people of the world. So Hawk, he flies out there to that flame. Flies through it once, twice, 3 times. And on the 4th time, he gets that flame and is flying back to shore. Hawk is tired. He's been flying a long, long time, and that flame is burning brighter and hotter, and that flame starts to burn at his beak. That long, straight beak is now melted to the little curved beak that it is now. And although Hawk feels this pain, he knows he can't drop that flame, for it's all for all the people of the world. Raven looks out there and he sees his brother Hawk having troubles. And Raven yells out to his brother, Yi Guai Quan, my brother, be brave. You do this for all the people of the world. And so Raven flies out there and he flies together back to shore with Hawk. And Raven took that flame and he took that flame and he threw it into the ground. He threw it into the trees. He threw it into the sky. He threw it into the water. He threw it into all the rocks. He threw it into the animals. And he took that flame and he threw it into the human beings. And now we all have that flame. We all have that fire. We all have that spirit that Raven brought to us. We all have the spirit. Gunatish, gunatish.
Boy, you know, I enjoyed your story so much, and it's interesting to cast the elements around us into roles that we can see more clearly, to call alcoholism and all that accountable, because it ravages you if you let it. Mm-hmm. And And watching television, it's such a good delivery system, especially Oprah Winfrey and all of her guests and these women of power. It's not the technology that's the problem. It's the content. It's if we use technology as a delivery system to distract us and to enable us to disconnect from spirit, it's a problem. It's just what we do with the tools at hand.
Exactly. I love Oprah.
Yeah, I do too.
And I'm like one of these men who I love watching Oprah because
My husband does too.
I get value from that. I get value from that. And my wife and I, we will record certain programs so we can avoid all this other stuff that's on there. And one of my goals, my projects is this summer I'm going up to Alaska to create videos of the stories.
Mm, good.
And of the traditions. And I also want to create this superhero raven character and put it in animation. And I've been talking to some friends of mine so we can do that for the kids so they can have something to watch and something positive. Because even when the parents, the adults might be off doing something else or partying, so many times the TV is their babysitter.
Yeah.
And so they're always in the back room. They're watching videos or DVDs. And so if I could
introduce them to some new heroes. Them,
exactly.
And positive role models.
Exactly. And to bring that to them. And again, the way to teach our people is to start them off young and to get that interest going. Because even if they do step off that path, as I did, they still have that good foundation started, and it's easier for them to get back on it and to find and discover who they are, as opposed if they didn't start out in that direction. So that's another thing I'm looking to do, and create more videos, audio, and things.
To preserve and disseminate.
Exactly. And the stories. I'm looking to put it on CD and discs, and I'm starting to do all that now because I understand that, especially since I made that film with Sherman Alexie, The Business of Fancy Dancing, the importance and how we can use this media, this to get our word across, to share with everybody. And so I'm really looking to create these things and get myself out there now. And usually I play my music. I haven't made a CD or a tape or anything, just because I...
That's in the works.
It's in the works, because I've always just brought it there and just to share with people on the spot. But now if I can reach more people through this media, then that's great. And again, if I can facilitate that healing. And my whole thing, too, is we are telling a story. And what story? If I can assist you to tell a story within your own life, your family life, your organization, your tribe, your group, whomever. But it all starts with the individual. You know, what story is it that you want to tell? And you're accountable. We're all accountable.
And what characters do you want to invite in your story and to speak to you and inform you and inspire you? A friend of mine says his children grow up and who are the heroes? Sports figures that misbehave and, you know, musicians, rock stars, who are the heroes for today? They've put them in those roles, but they're not delivering any inspiring message. They're delivering messages he says he looks to the elders.
Yeah,
Buckminster
yeah.
Fuller is one of his personal heroes. Indigenous elders are another set of heroes. He said he wants to introduce those to his children to inspire and to teach.
Exactly.
And how does he do that?
These characters are elders. Our elders are passing away so fast. I want to get them on film, and I want to introduce them to the people. That's one of my projects this summer. I want to film the elders, and so that our generation can see this wisdom that they still possess. And also...
All generations. Could use
exactly.
This is all part of the human family.
And that's it. I mean, you just got me a great idea to not only video or just film Native elders, but just elders in general. And I'm talking elders. There's a difference between an old person and an elder.
Mm-hmm. And what confers that status of elder? What is it?
Oh, an elder is somebody, again, they pass their wisdom on. They live this life of respect, of reverence. And an old person, I mean, I have some old people in my family who are just complaining. And they just gripe about this, gripe about that, and complain, and they don't want to do anything about it. And it's just like a grumpy old man over there. But an elder is somebody who has that love, has that sharing, has that knowledge, and is willing to pass it on. And that's how I see it. That's how I see the role of an elder.
Who's the next stitch in that tapestry?
You know what? It's kind of our elders are passing on quite rapidly, and now people are coming up to me and asking me, how do you do this?
Hmm.
How do we do this memorial gathering or this potlatch? Or how do we do this gathering or this event? And so they're asking me, or this story, where did this song come from? How do you say this? And how do you do this? And so it's up to me, too. Again, I'm responsible.
Elder in training.
I'm an elder in training. That's why I like to do these characters of an old man and old grandma and stuff. It's because I am this elder in training, and talking about these things, and it helps me. And I need to do my homework. I need to do my homework. And as I sit here and point to this, my heart here, this is my home right here, my physical body. I need to do my homework. And so it's
And this earth is our home.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just
this universe is our home.
Yeah. This earth, this land, everyone. It's our home. And now, I mean, this is your home. This is everybody's home. We all live here on this earth and this land now. We need to take care of it. We're not doing that. We are the caretakers of this land, of this earth. But first, before we do that, we need to take care of our own home, which is our physical body. We need
first
to,
place to begin.
We need to start with ourselves. I get back to, what story do you want to tell? And that's where it starts.
And that's why we call it wisdom traditions, because what those elders have to pass on in that deep tradition among so many peoples is about how to take care, how to cultivate the inner garden and the outer garden, how to begin to lay that foundation for right action, right thinking, right living.
Mm-hmm. And to seek that out, look for it. I mean, be just honorary about it and just go find it, go get it for yourself and find it and grasp that. And
one thing I like about today's society is that everything's on the table. It's like one big smorgasbord.
Yeah.
You can pick and choose among the menu as you see fit. So what are you going to put on your plate? What are you going to put in your heart? What are you going to paint in the back of your cloak?
Yeah.
What are you going to put in your...
What's your story?
In your story. Who is going to people it?
Exactly.
What's going to
what
be there?
What is your story?
It's your choice. We have choice. Was it about choice today? You mentioned earlier.
Oh, yeah.
In the first hour. That was the gift of the Creator to us. Use our choice wisely.
We have the gift of choice. And so it's use our choice.
Use it well.
And to be accountable for yourself and write a fantastic and live a wonderful... Live life like a story.
And thank you so much, Gene, for bringing that story to us, bringing that message to us, and telling it so well. That was Gene Tagaban. Thank you for spending some time sharing with us today. I'm Laura Lee.
Laura Lee Online, www.lauralee.com.